Well, I deeply and passionately love music. I love music so, so much. I believe music is a spiritual means of grace, one of the ways we can connect with God through singing and playing, even just through listening. My appreciation for music began two places, in my home and at my church. My home was filled with music as a child. I loved to dance in the front room listening to music, something I enjoy doing with my two-year-old nowadays. I also loved music at church, even just to sit and listen. I learned to sing at church. Some of my earliest memories of children's choir, and Marion, you've heard me tell this story before, but I remember being in the children's choir, the one you lead with our kids, and the chimes, and we had little light blue choir robes, and we'd march into the front, and we'd sing deep and wide, deep and wide. We'd sing that one, and we'd sing Zacchaeus was a wee little man, and I got to play the xylophone, and I remember being a part of that little choir. I remember when I was a little older, I got to be in the older kids' choir, and that's where I was the first time my voice cracked. I remember running out of the choir room down the hall. The choir director had to come find me. It's okay. We'll find a different part for you to sing. I remember the first time I ever learned to sing a harmony. It was to Holy, Holy, Holy. It's number 64 in our hymnal. And I remember singing a part, and it was like what everybody was singing, but it was different than what everybody was singing, and it sounded better when there were a couple of us doing those things together. You know, we actually have several hymnals in our pews these days. We've got the red one, we've got the green one, we've got the black one. And there's always this awkward moment when we call out a hymn. The hymn name is this, the number is this, the hymn book is that. I mean, oh my gosh. There's so many things to juggle. But that's because the United Methodist Church has worked very hard to make sure that our hymns and our songs hold a very difficult tension. We want to maintain our rich history of songs that have been a part of the Methodist people since we were the Methodist people, as well as embracing new styles and introducing us to songs that will soon, someday become our old favorites. We want all of these a part of things. I love opening with O 4,000 Tongues to Sing. I love that hymn. It's a great old Methodist hymn. And I love that new setting. I also love that classic setting too. And it's neat to do both. The hymnal is a very important book for Methodists. John Wesley was the guy that founded Methodism, what is now the United Methodist Church. And he used to tell all of his pastors they should never be without three books: their Bible, their Book of Discipline, which is the church law book, and their hymnal. We should always, as a pastor, you should always have those three books with you, no question. Though if your saddlebags, and I love this quote, if your saddlebags only have room for two, you should have the hymns memorized. Music was essential to John Wesley's ministry, and he was lucky enough to have a brother that actually wrote a ton of the hymns that are in this hymn book. So many of them written by his brother Charles to pair with the ministry. They'd sit and they'd talk about what was important and what was going on, and Charles would even listen to his brother's sermons and then write hymns about them. That one we just sang, Love Divine, All Loves Excelling, beautifully based off of a whole series of sermons that John Wesley taught. Because I tell you, most people don't leave reciting a sermon after Sunday, but there are folks that'll leave humming a hymn. And it was a way to bring things into people's lives. Our hymnal actually contains a lot more than just the pages with the music. Oh, there are entire services in here. The service of baptism, a service of confirmation, a service of marriage, just all sorts of things. There's rituals, there's the psalters where we sing the psalms back and forth together, and there are rules. Well, directions, really. It's on page 7 in the Roman numerals. I put it on the front of the bulletin just so you might take it with you. Directions for singing. The term Methodist actually was a derogatory term used to describe John Wesley and his friends for being so darn methodical. And John Wesley said, sure, I'll use that. We're Methodist. These are some of the reasons. He had directions for everything. He had directions to pray. He had directions to serve. He had directions to sing. But I tell you, these directions are actually a lot more biblical than they are about OCD. John Wesley had a deep belief in the importance of music. And that belief in the importance of music is not just his own. Music has been a very important part of God's people's lives as long as we've been God's people. The best example is in the book of Psalms. It's actually our oldest hymn book. People would gather and the hymns would be sung. The Psalms were a part of worship when it was in the tabernacle that moved through the desert, when it was in the temple that stood so tall in Jerusalem, and now in the little copy we find in the drawer next to the hotel bed. It's a hymn book for the ages. We find songs of praise, songs of lament, powerful testaments to the realities of life. In the Psalms, we also find encouragement to see a deeper, more spiritual grace within the songs of our lives. Hear these words from Psalm 98. Oh, sing to the Lord a new song, for he has done marvelous things. God's right hand and holy arm have gotten victory. The Lord has made known that victory. God has revealed his vindication in the sight of the nations. God has remembered his steadfast love and faithfulness to the people of Israel. All the ends of the earth have seen the victory of our God. Make a joyful noise to the Lord, all the earth. Break forth into joyous song and sing praises. Sing praises to the Lord with the lyre and the sound of melody. With trumpets and the sound of the horn, make a joyful noise before the King, the Lord. Let the sea roar, all that fills it, the world and those who live in it. Let the floods clap their hands. Let the hills sing together for joy at the presence of the Lord. For the Lord is coming to be with the people. God will judge the world with righteousness and the peoples with equity. Beautiful. This psalm is often quoted with that single phrase, make a joyful noise. And as Cliff can tell you, any choir director worth their salt has used this psalm to invite folks who think they can't sing to join the choir. No, just come. You don't have to be good. Just make a joyful noise with us. But this psalm invites us to consider more than singing. The songs and joyful noises that we are called to create and participate in aren't just with our voices or our instruments. To be honest, my favorite line in the psalm is, make a joyful noise, the world and all who live in it. It's the living that strikes me as so important. The songs and noises we are called to create can be made with our lives. How we choose to live can be a song unto the Lord. The sweet melody of a life in line with God's will, joining a chorus of those seeking God together, lives that are a joyful offering to the Lord. If you think of your life as a song, directions for singing can take on a whole new meaning. Because then, they're about life. Learn these tunes before you learn any others. Afterwards, learn as many as you please. Now, musically, this was about knowing the basic songs before trying to pick up all these different new ones. These directions for singing originally appeared in John Wesley's book called Select Hymns, which included all the hymns that he felt anchored the theology of Methodism. So we wanted folks to know those first. There were others, yes, they were great, but start here, he said. Love divine, all loves excelling, oh, for 1,000 tongues to sing. Those were a part of that select group, because they can tell you as much about God as any sermon I will ever preach. But the encouragement of this direction for singing carries over to our lives as well. You know, there are some core principles of holy living that we should always work toward first. There's a lot of great things we can do with our lives, but maybe there are some select things that we should start and grow from first. When asked, Jesus named them as love God and love your neighbor. You know, when we put them out on the street with banners, we said welcome and grace and justice and service. Might we strive to learn these things first? After, learn as much as you like of others. But start here. There's so much to holy living, but starting with the basics is usually a good idea. Rule 2, sing them exactly as they're printed here, without altering or mending them at all. And if you have learned to sing them otherwise, unlearn them as soon as you can. Many of Wesley's hymns were actually based off of the tunes from bar songs. And a few others would be changed by different churches. A church that didn't believe in grace as much might put a different word in instead. And so John Wesley wanted two things. Sing the church words, not the bar words. And don't sing the bad theology, sing our theology. It was a little controlling. people had learned some of these hymns other places, and they decided that they were going to sing them their way. I hear the rest of the room singing, but this is how I sing this song. This "no, I'll do it my way" attitude certainly affects more than just singing, doesn't it? We've all seen it occur in life, and maybe in our own lives too. I'll do it my way. I don't care how everyone else is doing it. Now look, I'm not going to stand here and tell you to live your life in a way that I define. But I will ask you this. Please open yourself to the possibility that the way you live isn't the only way to live. When we gather together as a faith community, we have the opportunity to learn and grow and discern what parts of our own living are going well and what other parts we might need to unlearn, let go of, and take a cue from someone else. Sing all. See that you join with the congregation as frequently as you can. Let not a single degree of weakness or weariness hinder you. If it is a cross to you, take it up, and you will find a blessing. Aren't you glad I don't preach like that? That's fun. There was a recent study that actually found that fewer and fewer people are singing in church. Like people just stand up and let the music happen and then sit back down. This has been attributed to the praise services in some bigger churches that are more like rock concerts, because people sort of feel like that rock star up front leading the worship is doing just fine and they'll all just watch. But even in congregations like ours, people can find all sorts of reasons not to join in. Oh, I'm not a good singer. Oh, I don't like this one. I'm not in the mood. Wesley was offering the encouragement to try anyway. And I do agree with him, though I may not use the take up the cross imagery, I do agree with him that you will be blessed by it. I also agree that we should seek to live every opportunity we get in life and not sit out on chances to be a part of what's going on in life. There are moments we can look at things. Some of the same excuses get used. I see this opportunity in life, but oh, that's not my style. Oh, I don't know if I'm comfortable with that one. Oh, I sang last time. You know, as many of us heard as children, we received the same encouragement in these directions. Try it. You might like it. And even more, our lives will be blessed. Even if we say, I did try it, it wasn't my thing. That's fine. But we're better for the trying. Sing lustily, Cliff, lustily. It's an adverb. Okay. Sing lustily with good courage. Beware of singing as if you were half dead or half asleep. But lift up your voice with strength. Be no more afraid of your voice now, nor more ashamed of its being heard than when you sung the songs of Satan. I love that line. I'm not going to name names, but I have seen plenty of half-dead singing. Now, I do want to decode the ending a little bit with you here. This whole, I've seen, be no more afraid than when you sang the songs of Satan. People would sing the bar songs. They knew the music. They knew everything. They'd sing political songs. He actually took some that way, too. They'd be sung at political rallies. They'd take the music, add church words to it. And even popular songs, you know, that people are singing and having a good time. Let's put some church words to that tune and we'll sing them. And what would happen is John Wesley would see people out at the bar singing the song, and then they'd come to church. And they'd sing it like this. And he's like, I totally know you can do this better. For some reason, people checked the enthusiasm at the door when they walked into church. Wesley wanted as much energy for church as they had for everything else in their lives. Now again, I'm not going to name names, but I have seen plenty of half-dead living. Our lives as an offering to God deserve to be lived with courage and strength and be vibrant. Why should we shy away from Christian living? I wonder, do we sometimes put less into living the way God wants us to live than we put into other things in our lives? And I wonder, if we could put as much energy into living as God calls us as that we do to other things, what would that look like? Rule 5, one my sister often opened up and quoted to me. Sing modestly. Do not bawl so as to be heard above or distinct from the rest of the congregation, that you may not destroy the harmony, but strive to unite your voices together so as to make one clear, melodious sound. In his own way, John Wesley was trying to tell us that singing in a community is not American Idol. He didn't have that reference at the time, but I think he would have made it. The idea of, look at me, I'm singing like this, is not what community singing is about. And this is a perfect parallel to self-centered living. To recognize that as God's people, we are a part of something. We are not the whole something. We're invited to bring our uniqueness, but in a way that creates space for others. Because we have the opportunity to be a part of something bigger than ourselves. These last couple are just so fun. Sing in time. Whatever time is to be sung, be sure to keep with it. That ever-important musical direction to settle into the rhythm. Choirs make a living, waving their arms, trying to get people to feel the movement of the music. And honestly, pastors are doing the same thing, trying to get people to feel the movement of the Spirit in life. Whether we're rushing our lives or dragging them, we're invited to settle in and feel the rhythm of the Spirit. Also, both in music and living, it reminds us of the danger of getting worn out with things and complacent in the way we live. Yeah, I used to put a lot of energy into this, and now I'll just settle in. Can we live with the same vigor and passion of the new life that we receive? And then that last direction. Above all, sing spiritually. Have an eye to God in every word you sing. Aim at pleasing Him more than yourself or any other creature. In order to do this, attend strictly to the sense of what you sing and see that your heart is not carried away with the sound, but offered to God continually. So shall your singing be such as the Lord will approve and reward you when He cometh in the clouds of heaven. This just ties right back into our scripture. This is the sound Highlands United Methodist Church should sound like, not just in music, but in our living as a community of faith. Always keeping an eye to God, working to please God in all that we do, making our lives a mighty chorus of thanks and praise, a joyful noise for all the earth. Amen.